Welcome to the serialized short story audiobook collection, Bones Are White, by Scott Sigler. Get the stories in Bones Are White for all ebook readers at scottsigler.com/bonesarewhite, or from that same page as a full-length audiobook. You can also buy the ebook version directly from the Kindle Store, the Nook Store, Apple's iBooks, and from Google Play. This book contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, cue up some Taylor Swift and enjoy. I got no fucking idea how there were already cobwebs down here. We arrived at this mansion for the first time last night, and the place had been spotless. As in, eat off the floor because it's cleaner than our plates back home, spotless. Hell, I'd been in that same basement about 6 hours earlier, and the place had been well-lit and dust-free. I carried the food into the basement, which was darker than the butthole of a hibernating bear. Past the bottom of the stairs, there was a little bit of light from a couple of already half-melted candles that illuminated cobwebs up in the corners. Okay, maybe the corners weren't entirely cobbed just yet, but there were full-fledged spider webs with that little spot of black eight-legged welcome wagon sitting in the middle. Billy Mac got a thing for spiders, and spiders got a thing for Billy Mac. The room's strongest illumination came from a flat-panel TV. Billy Mac sat in front of it, slunk into a couch, his back to me. His planet-sized head looked like a black hole against the bright screen. We'd been here less than 24 hours, and somehow that little bastard had acquired a 70-incher that took up half a wall. I don't know how much that cost, or how much the Xbox he was playing cost, but I'm sure I'll find out when the Visa statement comes. In addition to a thing for spiders, Billy Mac got a thing for credit cards. "You ask your ma for permission to buy that?" "Uh-huh," Billy Mac said. His head nodded slightly. That's about the most the boy moves a day, except for his thumbs. "You're lying," I said. "You didn't ask her."
"Maybe I forgot," he said. "I have an overactive imagination, you know. Sorry about that, Paul."
That boy tires me out. I mean, he just exhausts me. "I brought you some dinner."
"Thanks," he said. "Ma send down any chocolate aisles?"
I tossed the box over the back of the couch so it landed on his lap.
"Kick ass," he said.
He leaned a little to his left like he was ducking gunfire that might come out of the screen and hit him. On the flat panel, a soldier in camouflage was shooting it out with some bad guys. I was looking at the back of Billy Mac's head at about the same proportion he was looking at his two-dimensional gunman.
"I love what you done with the place," I said. "You better not spider up your bedroom."
"This is my bedroom," he said. "It's all the same, Pa. I'd rather just stay down here."
I nodded, even though he still hadn't turned around to look at me. My 18-year-old son living in the basement, mooching off his parents. Slayerville or San Francisco, some things never change.
"That's fine," I said. "But you might change your mind when I tell you this here mansion is built on a fault line and that there's a bunch of locked rooms. Not that you know, seeing as you ain't left this basement since we got here, that act as prison cells for some particularly nasty supernatch convicts."
"I know, Paul."
"You know what?"
"That this house on a fault line, and that some rooms are prison cells for particularly nasty supernatch convicts."
"How the hell could you know that?"
I saw him shrug.
"Sometimes a body can just tell these things."
"So we're on a paranormal fault line, a line that opens somewhere into this basement, and you still want to stay down here?"
He nodded.
"Yeah, I kind of feel at home."
Sometimes I wonder which side Billy Mac is on. Oh, sure, he thinks he's on our side right now, thinks he's on the side of good. But I've seen more than my fair share of properly raised supernatch gravitate toward the side of evil spirits and whatnot. They don't know what's happening, but it happens. Hell, little Vlad was a great kid, and look how he turned out. Billy Mac was almost a man. A fat, lazy, damn near retarded man, but a man nonetheless.
"All right, son," I said.
Maybe I don't like to call him that, but that's what he is.
"Everything else okay?"
"Everything but them fucking San Francisco ferries."
"Son, watch your mouth."
He hit the pause button and actually turned around to face me over the back of the couch. He's got a black, scraggly excuse for a mustache and a beard. The pause video game light backlit his long, stringy hair. The boy looks like an overweight version of a scrawny devil worshiper type, if that makes any sense.
Oh, I'm 18. I can't say fucking.
No, you can't say fairies, I said. No gay hating in my house. Of course you can say fucking. If you're old enough to die for your own country, you're old enough to choose your own words. You can swear. Just don't do it in front of company. Or your mother.
Shit, Paul, in front of Ma? I ain't stupid, you know.
Jerry's still out on that one, son. But I mean it. No gay hating in my house.
He laughed. I'm pretty sure the spiders vibrated in their webs when he did. I think they were laughing right along with him.
Paul, I ain't gay hating.
You called them fairies.
He nodded.
Right, that's what they are. Fairies. You know, the fae folk. Them that usually kick around the woods.
Christ. That's all I needed right now. A passel of smart-mouthed, flying assholes that unroll every roll of toilet paper, take all of your left socks, and do things that shouldn't be mentioned to your sugar bowl.
We got a fairy infestation? Hell, you sure, son? I don't even want to think about how expensive an exterminator is in this godforsaken city.
Billy Mack looked at me like I was the one who was stupid. He shook his head, turned back to his TV, hit unpause, and his thumb started going to town again.
Whatever, Paul.
I stared at the back of his head for a few more seconds, trying to figure out where Betty Lou and I had gone wrong, trying to think of something to say to this boy whom I just didn't connect with. How can I be so close with Beau, the seed of another man, and not find common ground with my own flesh and blood? Listener, if you ever figure out the answer to that, you let me know. Unless you're one of them psychologist types, I don't much truck with charlatans like you. I turned and walked out of the basement, finding my way through the candlelight and brushing aside a new spiderweb that had grown over the stairwell in the 5 minutes since I'd come down. For the first time since 1962, the door opened. Brass hinges creaked with disuse. The thick door itself seemed to move with a sleepy confusion, slowly swinging out and revealing a tiny, deep black room behind. And in that blackness, two spots of red light, slowly growing into the shape of eyes as long closed lids opened with even less speed than the door. The eyes closed once, twice, blinking away 6 decades of sleep. A bony, green-skinned, black-clawed foot came out of the darkness, the prisoner's first step. The foot sat down on a puddle of molten, green glowing brass. A yelp. The foot shot back into the darkness. The red eyes narrowed, then blinked again. With a blur of motion, something came out of the room, shooting over the molten brass and down the hall. I think my feet were moving before my brain actually processed the scream. My wife, screaming with surprise and fear. I came up the stairs to the main entryway, an entryway that's 20 feet wide and runs half as long as a football field. The scream was over, but the echoes of it still bounced off the high marble floors and walls. It had come from higher up in the house. Second story? Third? As I started up the stairs to the second floor, I saw Beau and Sunshine come out of the big-ass dining room. Beau didn't have a weapon. Sunshine had a throwing knife in each hand. Beau headed for the stairs behind me, but Sunshine was so damn fast, she passed her brother and caught me when I was halfway up.
Pa, was that Ma?
I nodded as I went up. Nodded because I couldn't talk. If anything happened to Betty Lou, God have mercy on whatever done it, because I sure as hell would not. The stairs were solid stone, yet they shook from the weight of my son Beau pounding up them behind us. He's slow even on open ground. Coming upstairs, moving all that weight, he ain't exactly Jesse Owens, if you'll pardon the black reference. He'd have to catch up. Sunshine and I hit the second floor. There was only a moment to look down the hallway with its dark redwood paneling before we heard the zap of a magic blast coming from one flight up.
Take that, you godforsaken demon vermin!
The battle cry of Betty Lou Hunterson. Music to my ears. Whatever was attacking her had just got a face full of gnatched up costume jewelry. I was halfway up the stairs to the third floor when I heard another voice.
Ma, get down!
That was Luke. My youngest son and my wife were in danger. I shoved my hand into my pocket and slid my fingers through Old Glory. Whatever was up there was about to get a mouthful of gnatched up silver knuckles. Sunshine shot past me. I reached out to grab her, to hold her back, but the stairs made it awkward and she was too damn fast. She reached the top step before I did and vanished from sight for just a second. Then she was flying backward. I had a moment of nut-numbing pain as I saw where her trajectory would take her. Straight over the marble railing and down 20 feet to the marble floor below. That didn't happen, though, because my hands came up and caught her tiny waist before she went over. She don't weigh hardly nothing, but her momentum was enough to pull me against the hard rail, mashing my hip into the unforgiving stone. I slipped, and we both almost went over, but I ain't that old just yet. As I regained my balance, I saw something nasty zipping past my left side and shooting down the stairs. With my attention focused on my baby girl, I didn't see much, but then again, it don't take much to recognize a goblin. He looked like a cross between a frog and a wolf. Green skin with sparse, gray fur atop lean muscles. He weren't more than 3 feet high, a little small for his kind, with a mouth 2 feet wide and big pissed-off black eyes. He had on a black dog collar that swirled with moving orange runes. I had to warn my middle son. Bo, heads up! The goblin was there and gone before I could set Sunshine on her feet. She looked a little groggy and was bleeding from her lower lip. Sunshine, baby, you okay? She blinked a bit. She shook her head hard. Then the fight came back into her eyes.
Where'd that little goober go?
She started down the stairs, but I held her tight.
Hold on, girl, I said.
I looked up the stairs to the third floor, intent on shouting for the rest of my family, but before I did, I saw two of the most beautiful things in the world, the faces of my wife and my son, alive and well. Both pissed off with some mussed-up hair, mind you, but alive and well.
Hunter,
love of my life said,
go get that little bastard and kick his ass.
I pointed at Luke.
You stay here with your ma.
I let go of Sunshine.
Stay behind me, girl. I mean it.
I headed back the way I'd come. Luke would be pissed as hell, but I wasn't telling him to stay back to keep him out of danger. He was there to protect his mother. Later, I could explain that to him. But for now, all he knew was his daddy and his little sister were tear-assing down some wide marble steps in pursuit of a big-mouthed goblin while he was ordered, yet again, to stay behind. I didn't see Bo until I reached the ground floor and the entryway. My son lay on his side, eyes scrunched tight, hands at his crotch, and knees up almost to his chin. He'd taken one in the bits, I could see that, but I only gave this a passing glance on account of what was standing over him. It was a man wearing a fluffy purple sweater and electric blue hot pants so tight you could see he weren't of the Jewish persuasion. He had low-heeled black boots with white socks rolled up at the ankles. His short black hair was slicked back a bit, and a thick, well-groomed mustache made him look a little bit like that singer from that one rock band that's named after a royal girl, a princess or duchess or something like that. Whatever he was, he stood over my baby boy. I stopped in front of them both. Sunshine slid off to my right, increasing the distance between us in case this hot pants threat tried to take us both out with one shot. His dark eyes tracked her, but only briefly. He looked at me, the obvious threat in the room.
Mister, I said, you'd best step away from my son, and you'd best do it now.
He looked at me with cold black eyes, put his hands on his waist, and kind of stuck one hip out to the right.
Excuse me, Grizzly Adams, perhaps you better go get your eyes checked, because I just saved this luscious chunk of black licorice.
I looked at the man, then down at Bo. Bo still hadn't opened his eyes, but he nodded.
It's true, Pa, he said in a painful whisper of a voice. That goblin need me in the jimmy.
The man kept his hip popped out, but he turned his head and looked up to the ceiling. While he did that, he put his finger behind his ear and pushed it out a little.
What's that? Seems like someone should be apologizing to me, yet I still haven't heard the magic words. Oh, where are you, magic words? You should be tickling my eardrums, but you're nowhere to be found.
I'm not sure how long I stared. Maybe it was a few seconds, maybe it was a few minutes. Finally, I realized he wanted an apology.
Who the hell are you?
He put one hand on his chest, the other palm up, as if he were holding up a globe or something.
I'm Freddy, your fairy prison guard. Once prisoner 24601 broke out of his cell, I was teleported in to handle it.
Why you?
Why me?
He threw his head back and his arms up.
Because I am fabulous! That's why. I can call in some other fairies to help me out, but then I wouldn't get as much overtime. So do you think we could hurry along the chit-chat and get down to business? But before we do, I should be hearing something nice, but no one is saying the things that they should be.
Apparently, catching escaped convict goblins came second to apologies and thank yous.
Freddy, thank you for saving my boy.
He pointed a finger at my face.
Hey, you don't need to be racist about it.
Huh?
You don't get to call this kid boy, you inbred redneck piece of Republican hater shit.
This was going from bad to worse.
No, you don't understand. He's my son.
Freddy leaned back a little, looked at me with narrowed eyes. He looked down at Bo, who was still covering his privates.
Hey, Big Black, Freddy said. Not really your old man?
Bo nodded. Freddy said.
And by that you mean he's your father, or maybe he's just your daddy.
A bit of anger started to sweep away Bo's look of pain.
He's my pa.
Freddy took a deep breath, held his hands palms out, and wiggled his fingers.
Hey, whatever you rednecks want to call it, who am I to judge, right? If you want to play daddy games and take the poop shoot express, that's really not my problem.
Listener, don't get me wrong. I know we should have been tracking down that goblin, but I just couldn't get my head around this.
Freddy, I said, you're a fairy, right?
He brought his right hand up to the left side of his face and snapped his fingers, then moved to the right side and snapped again.
Two snaps says, hell yeah, you burly bear.
I nodded. At least we had that down.
So you're a fairy, and you think that we're gay, and you're making fun of that. Ain't this the kind of thing where people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones?
He snarled and put his hands on his waist.
We're fairies, not faggots, he said. Bitch, we're the ones who made pink the new black, not them. My kind has been here for 500 years, Mr. Shaggy D.A. Just because those queens ripped off our luscious style and copped our manly vocal characteristics doesn't mean we like smoking a meat pole or driving a pipe truck down the Hershey Highway.
At this point, I'm guessing my jaw dropped open a bit. Here was this thin little fella, wearing a purple sweater and blue hot pants, spouting the same kind of rhetoric I might hear from the boys at Sadie Mae's Farm Supply and Honky Tonk back in Slayerville. I love my hometown, don't get me wrong, but we ain't exactly got a glut of culture back there, and some of the boys I grew up with ain't exactly the highly educated types, if you can understand my way of speaking.
Mr. Freddy, maybe I'm not understanding things right, I said. You talk with a bit of a lisp, you stick out your hip like a runway model, and if your wrist was any limper, it would have to be broken. No offense.
None taken, honey.
But y'all are acting like, well, like you got something against homosexuals.
He shrugged.
God hates fags, and so do we. Not that we believe in that higher power, mind you. My God, they didn't know how to dress in that Old Testament, am I wrong? But the sentiment still stands.
Maybe my jaw opened a little more here. I'm not sure. It was awful confusing.
So, you're homophobic.
He rolled his eyes.
If the label says Prada, you don't hide it with a blouse, honey.
You're a homophobic San Francisco fairy.
He clapped with limp-wristed hands held up near his face.
Agatha Christie solves another mystery. So listen, cowboy, if we could put the philosophical issues in a back basket, we have that small matter of an escaped goblin that needs some TLC of the smack him in his little face variety. Do you mind if we get back to work? If I don't put him back in his pen by 10 o'clock, my girl is going to bed without me, and I won't be tapping that sweet pussy tonight.
They say that when a man is being tortured, the pain can get so great that eventually his brain tries to shut down to save his sanity. I think something like that happened to me. I'd heard way too much to deal with, so the part of me that wanted to rationalize and discuss things just crossed the border from San Diego into Tijuana.
All right, I said. What do we do?
He ran his fingers through his black hair, pinched at his mustache, then clapped three times.
Okay, here's what we've got. There was a level 7 ward on the goblin's door. I don't know how that broke, but there's level 8 wards on the house itself.
Sunshine shook her little head.
Ain't no such thing as 8th level. 7 is as high as it goes.
Freddy rolled his eyes.
Oh, what do they teach you kids in school these days? You're in the big city now, Ellie Mae, and here, things go up to level 9. Trust me, Cupcake, this house is wrapped in level 8 restraining protections tighter than a mini condom on a horse's...
Watch it, I said. I'll work with you, but kindly mind your manners around my daughter.
Freddy looked at me, then at her. He nodded.
Right. Well, Myth Perfect Cheekbones, trust me when I say it's level 8. That goblin can't go anywhere unless someone brings a supernatural battering ram to knock down those front doors. So all we have to do is round him up and put him back in his little cell.
I nodded.
We'll take your word for it. So where in the house do you think he'd go?
Freddy rolled his eyes again. He seemed to be quite fond of that mannerism.
Don't you have goblins in whatever cousin-kissing backwater you come from?
Sure we do.
Well, then you know the goblin is probably at the pool, working on his synchronized swimming.
I didn't know what to say. Sunshine did.
Goblins do synchronized swimming?
He put his hands on his waist again.
I thought you said you had goblins where you came from.
We do, she said. We just don't have any pools.
Bo reached up and tugged on my sleeve.
Huh, he said. We got a pool?
Did we? I looked at Freddy, who sighed. I swear that man could stretch out a simple sigh and make it sound like 10 kinds of insult.
Yes, Uncle Jed, you have a pool. Indoor, Olympic size, in the back. Come on, I'll show you.
I have to say, I was pretty impressed with our pool. It's big. The sounds of splashing echoed off the tile walls and a smoked glass ceiling. It smelled all nice and clean, too. Except for that stench of goblin smelling up the place. I wondered if the pool cleaning would come out of my paycheck. We all crouched down low in the doorway, trying to stay unseen. Sure enough, the goblin was in the water, sticking his hand up, then both his feet, doing all kinds of stuff that looked just plain odd. The goblin didn't seem to notice us. He was swimming closer.
Told ya, Freddy said. I bet he tried to get out, but he couldn't, so the next thing he did was head for the pool.
Part of me wanted to know why goblins like synchronized swimming, but it was a small part. A larger part just wanted to go get this thing and go the hell to sleep. Besides, there was something more important on my mind.
Freddy, how long has this goblin been locked up here?
He thought for a moment.
Well, he was incarcerated in 58, but then he broke out in 60. My buddy Elton recaptured him in 62. He's been locked up in that cell ever since.
Closer and closer, the goblin swam. Whenever he came up for air, I think he was humming a tune, maybe to keep his timing or something.
Okay, I said. So if his cell had a level 7 ward, how did he get out?
Freddy shrugged. I don't know. My guess is he had to have some help.
Help from who?
The man looked annoyed.
What am I, the yellow pages of the supernatural criminal world? I bust mouths, cowboy. I don't push papers. Look, we need a plan. That little piece of pistachio pie is dangerous.
I felt Bo's big hand on my shoulder.
Hey, Pa, is Goblin living or is they undead?
I sighed. If Bo didn't start paying attention to his supernatural studies, he might wind up being the death of us all.
Goblins are living, son.
So they need air?
I saw Freddy smirking. That made me angry. I shot him a glance that said, shut your mouth. I don't mind people ripping on me so much, but don't you dare mock my children.
Yes, son, I said. Living creatures need air.
Oh, Bo said. In that case, we don't need a plan. Nobody kicks me in the jimmy.
Before I could react, he pushed me to one side and Freddy to the other. Sunshine just got the hell out of the way. Bo ran at top speed toward the edge of the pool, then launched himself out into the air and tucked his knees to his chest.
Cannonball!
I think the goblin looked up just before Bo's big butt smashed into his nasty green face. Sunshine, me, and a soaking wet Bo stood by as Freddy hauled the drenched, coughing goblin away. Little guy damn near drowned in that pool. Getting hit on the head with 300-plus pounds of angry young man will do that, I guess. Son, I said, that was nice work. He smiled.
Thanks, Paul.
First the carrot, then the stick. But Bo, if you ever act without my permission like that again, I will whoop the daylights out of you. You understand? His smile vanished, and he looked down.
Yes, Paul.
The boy looked crushed, and that made me feel awful. How does that work, anyway? I'm supposed to give discipline and keep him safe, but doing so makes me feel lower than whale shit, which is fathoms, fathoms, fathoms deep. I slapped him on the shoulder.
Took him out good, though.
He looked up.
You think?
I looked at Sunshine.
Tell your brother.
She'd been real quiet, wondering if she was also in trouble. But when she knew she wasn't, her smile damn near split her face.
Oh, you were amazing. The way you tucked up like that in the airtime. That was the best cannonball I ever saw.
Bo smiled and looked away.
I didn't even know what I was doing.
I left Sunshine to talk to the boy while I chased down Freddy. Freddy had tied natched up cuffs on the goblin's wrists. The man was dragging the little feller back upstairs.
Freddy, I said, what now? You just put him back there?
He nodded.
That's the fact, Jack, unless the NP decides to move him to a more secure facility. But there aren't any facilities more secure than this one. When it comes to the Supernatch Supermax, your house is the end of the line, Hunter.
That was something I would have to look into later. There's always another answer, always another option.
But how did he get out? You said he had help, right?
Freddy nodded. That's my guess.
So what's to stop that help from letting him out again? Or letting some of the others out?
Freddy let out a low whistle.
Well, I'm sure that won't happen. I mean, if some of the others get out, well, let's just say it'll take more than a cannonball to end it. I'll talk to the ward and see if we can get some better security.
What about going outside and figuring out who did this?
Freddy smiled and started hauling the wet goblin away.
Outside? That is your job, Mr. Clampett. If you want to hee-haw and do-si-do and other things of that rustic southern nature, you be my guest.
I watched Freddy go. Somehow, knowing that a homophobic fairy was my first line of defense didn't make me feel any better. I let him get some headway, then walked upstairs to talk to my wife. I about choked on cobwebs. I hope I didn't breathe in one of those damn spiders. Nasty little critters. I carried a lunch plate and a box of ho-hos downstairs. On the flat panel, Billy Mack was playing some kind of medieval game, his electronic guy or whatever it's called, going at it with a dragon.
Dragons, huh?
He didn't bother to turn around, but he nodded.
Yep.
I ever tell you your pa once fought a dragon?
He nodded again.
Yep, only about 27 times.
That plate started to wiggle in my hand. I'm not saying there's ever an excuse for infanticide. I'm just saying that sometimes I understand.
You hear all that commotion last night, son?
He nodded.
Yep, you were all a bit noisy.
You didn't come to help?
The head shook.
Mm-hmm. Hell, Paul, you're Hunter Hunterson. Why would I have been near anything that you couldn't handle? I mean, hell, you fought a dragon. Hey, did you meet them San Francisco fairies?
I did. One of them anyways. Might have saved me some time if you just told me what you meant.
He shrugged. I was standing behind him, but I knew he was smiling.
Here's your damn dinner, I said.
I set it on the table next to the couch.
Thanks,
he said. A thank you? Well, at least that's a start.
Mousing down into Chocodiles?
I handed him the box I'd been given.
No, she said they were out. This here's a box of ho-hos.
He hit pause, looked at the box, then looked at me.
Go ahead and take them back up. I got standards, you know.
He had unpaused and turned back to his dragon game. In the light of hindsight, I realize I could have handled that situation in a bit more mature manner, but sometimes a kid can push you only so far. I reached over his shoulder and grabbed the controller out of his hand. I held it in front of his face, and then I crushed it into a dozen pieces. That seemed to get his attention.
"Eat the goddamn ho-hos," I said. "Eat every last one of them. Then you make sure all the wrappers go in the trash all nice and neat. Then you go upstairs and you thank your mother for being such a kind woman. Thank her and tell her you love her. You got that?"
He looked up at me with wide eyes, but he nodded.
"Good," I said. "Billy Mac, you better figure out real quick that your mama is the only reason you got a roof over your head. If it were up to me, I'd ship your worthless ass off to the sub-demonic Foreign Legion so you'd learn some discipline."
For a second, I thought I had an upper hand on him. Then that little bastard smiled again.
"I'm 18, Pa," he said. "Demonic Legion is volunteer only at my age. Maybe you could have shipped me off last year, but not now. I'll go pay proper respects to Ma. Realize I haven't been all that responsible in that department. In fact, I'll go right now."
He snapped his fingers and vanished in a cloud of smoke. I sniffed at the cloud. No, it wasn't smoke. It was brimstone. Lord above, being a parent ain't easy. I opened his box of ho-hos and took two for myself, then waved away the cobwebs as I trudged upstairs. Unlike my eldest son, I didn't know how to teleport.
Well, that's the tale of our first night in our new home, and every word of it is true. The only thing I added was some additional things Freddy said about gay people. I think you understand what kind of a feller he is, and I don't think we need to share all of his crude and misinformed thoughts. We still don't know how that goblin got out. We don't know who helped him. But a pair of shriveling nuts tells me that, sooner or later, we're going to find out. I just hope that my family is ready when we do.
Author's note for Hunter Hunterson and Sons, Home. I don't have much fancy author talk to share about this episode of Hunter Hunterson and Sons. I hope you read part one, Welcome to San Francisco, which was in the short story collection Blood is Red. If you did, you know the gist of this storyline. I like how it's all coming together. There are mysteries inside and outside of Hunter's new house. Bad things are going to go down, and Clan Hunterson will have to deal with them. Soon, the Huntersons will meet their neighbors, and we've already gone too damn long without them pulling a ticket on a parole-jumping supernatch convict. That'll come soon. Until then, we hope you enjoyed your time with the Hunterson family. Y'all come back now, you hear?
You have been listening to the Bones Are White serialized short story audiobook, written by Scott Sigler. This audiobook was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author or to hear his free weekly fiction podcast, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Greed by the band Separation of Sanity.
I am a creeping cancer, rots you to the core, pumping through your blackened heart, seduction of your soul, separation of your senses, sanity, your currency. I am your rolling gun, want your knees, kiss the screen.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favorite children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the heresies of Radolf Burntwein have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.